Just a few housekeeping chores. During the pandemic, we've been grateful that we have this technology in order to continue spread broadcasting the philosophy of Theosophy, and we've been able to do that in a few different countries, as well as a few different states. So we want everybody to know that, to recall that the ULT Declaration, which is something that all ULTs use wherever you go in the world, you will hear the same declaration. And it maintains the idea of anonymity. We have no cross-talking. If anybody has something to say, please do not reference a person's initials. That's why we use them for impersonality and to speak directly to the chairperson when called upon. And these ideas and traditions are so anyone who wants to share will feel safe giving their opinions and without distractions of any social differences or personal attributes. So we just ask that we all work to maintain these traditions. And on Sundays, our Sunday meeting is currently open here at Theosophy Hall for folks that want to come into the building. The doors open at 10:30. And for those that are coming to Theosophy Hall, we do ask that if you're going to join us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free zone for those for the benefit of those who have sensitivities. We will now hear the declaration.
The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without attaching, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all.
So in order for the lodge here in Philadelphia to put forth the ideas stated in the declaration. We do have 3 meetings a week. And we're just having a little bit of a... Yes, so we have 3 meetings a week. And as today on Sundays, we do have... we have an overall topic for the month, for this month of June. It's practical theosophy. Last week, we looked at the ideas of discernment, discrimination, and critique. Today, we will be looking at the ideas of realizing the justice and mercy of karma. And next week, the topic is living the higher life. As was stated earlier, the doors open here at Theosophy Hall at 10:30, and we Zoom and have in-person meetings on Sunday beginning at 11 and going until 12. On Wednesdays, we have finished up Mr. Judge's The Ocean of Theosophy, and currently are looking at the ideas that are put forth in the supplementary general in the back of Answers to Questions by Mr. Crosby. And before the meeting, probably on Monday, the pages for the supplementary general will be sent out in an email. That is a Zoom only class, and it starts at 7:30 and goes until 8:45. On Fridays, we have our Theosophy Roundtable discussions, and we are still in Mr. Judge's The Heart Doctrine. You should have gotten an email recently regarding the addition of some other assignments to read ahead of time. If you have not, please contact us. And that class starts at 6:30 and goes until 7:30. We do have a special meeting on June 22nd. It's a Wednesday. It's ULT Day, the United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission and future. And because this is a special commemorative meeting, we do ask that if you could possibly sign on a few minutes ahead of time, that way we can all be in the right frame of mind in order to appreciate this meeting and what it stands for. So the United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings of time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So as we just stated, we are looking today's class, it's a panel on realizing the justice and mercy of karma. One thing we did forget to mention, starting in July, our Sunday classes will be looking at Mr. Crosby, some of his writings, Eternal Verities. And you will be notified in plenty of time of which one of his articles we will be looking at. So realizing the justice and mercy of karma, we do want to open up the meeting with a short quote from The Voice of the Silence. It starts on page 37. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Be of good cheer, and rest content with fate. Such is thy karma, the karma of the cycle of thy births, the destiny of those who, in their pain and sorrow, are born along with thee. Rejoice and weep from life to life, chained to thy previous actions. So the meeting today, as we said, is a panel. The first talk is on justice. The second one is on mercy of karma. So the overall topic for this month's Sunday classes has been practical theosophy. So what are we looking at then when we think of realizing the justice and mercy of karma? We are not going to be speaking specifically about what karma is, the different types of karma. The focus will be on the idea of realizing it, realizing that there is justice and mercy in regards to karma. The whole thrust of understanding the philosophy is to be able to make theosophy a living power in our lives, to understand it in a practical manner, and to be able to put it into action in all aspects of our lives, because karma does affect us physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So the title begins with the concept of realizing the justice and mercy of karma. And so this class will basically be looking at how to put it in practical use in our lives. So the definition of realize is to become fully aware of something as a fact, to understand it clearly. So then we will become fully aware and to understand clearly this idea, this concept of the justice and mercy of karma. So justice then, the definition is the quality of being just, righteousness, equitableness, and or moral rightness. So karma, with its sister doctrine, reincarnation, explains rebirth, the bringing forth of causes, and justice dictates that the soul being reborn into a family, a country, on the earth at this particular time, that we are here because we have lessons that we need to learn. And we need to work on these. And in order to work on them, we will, if we are able to accomplish that lesson, then a new type of karma will be brought into one's life. So karma is the process, just a little background, is the process by which the universe balances out the choices and the ramifications that man has made. It is the universal law of harmony, the law of ethical causation, justice, reward, and punishment, the cause of birth and rebirth. So the results flowing from a cause, the cause of something, then it's action and reaction. This occurs not just a physical act, but also our thoughts as well. So just because we are not acting on something doesn't mean that it's not going to affect our karmic lives in the future. And just as an example of this, there could be a philanthropist who is very dedicated to giving money to different organizations. But in reality, if his reason for donating all that money is not for the good of the people that need those donations, but that in his mind, he is thinking of how people will appreciate him, think that he's a wonderful person. So he is giving this money, but he's not doing it with the highest motive. His thoughts are for himself. They are not for others. So karmically, even though he is giving this money away, he is making karmic retribution, and the universe has to balance all this out. And another idea that we want to put out is that many people ask for justice from an outside God. They petition with prayer to improve their lives or in a painful situation. They ask for things. They ask for money. They ask for the perfect children. And they ask God, why am I experiencing such bad things? What kind of justice is this? And some people will even thank God for the benefits he has given them because they feel as though he has decided that justice should be on their side. But this isn't so. It is the choices that we have made. It is the responsibility for good or bad results that are based on our choices, not on God's choices. And then there's this idea of fatalism. Many people cannot wrap their minds around the idea of karma because they feel as though it's fatalistic. It's like, why should I do anything if karma is going to give me a difficult life? Then how am I supposed to determine that this is what I have to experience? But in reality, even though karma is bringing us the duty we have to perform, it is the life that we have chosen from our previous actions and thoughts. So we can decide to change our future karma by the attitudes we can develop towards what justice has given us, because karma is always just. So we can develop it all in a positive way. If something seems not to be just, it is because we don't see the causes that we have set up that brings us these situations. We do not understand what our real nature is. We are all spiritual beings. Karma is a law that is inherent in us all. And if we do not understand this, we do feel as though our lives are unjust, that it's being done to us. This law pertains to the moral and ethical part of our natures. And because the choices we make, the results are just. And these choices are determined by our desires. And these can come from a higher and lower or lower aspect of our thoughts, of our mind. If we feel as though life is just, or is it giving us bad experiences, those are desires. We can desire to do for others. Those desires can be what we want to accept in the life that we have lived. We hear and know many people who have horrible disabilities, yet they are very positive and compassionate. They try to help others in the same circumstances. So we can accept what karma has given us. We can understand it, because if we understand that it is the choices that we have made in previous lives, then our life can be seen as just. And the results of these changes in our desires may not come immediately in this life, but our motive and acceptance will change our life in the future. The more our desires are in line with justice, the karmic strength of these impressions will lessen, karma will be absolved, and will allow a new type to emerge. So how is this idea of realizing the practical application of the justice of karma played out? As we have said, so we're going to summarize, it is understanding our spiritual nature. It is understanding that we have the responsibility, in order to help others, to have this high motive, because karma will listen not only to our thoughts, but our actions as well, our motives. So by studying these ideas, the philosophy, studying our meditation books, the Voice of the Silence, the Bhagavad Gita, we can be given ideas in order to make this a practical application of the justice of karma. So we will now hear about the mercy of karma.
So mercy, before we get to the main body of the talk, it's a very curious, when you try to do a search on the etymology of the word. It's been around about 1,000 years. It was borrowed from the French. They say merci beaucoup, of course, but it had to do with markets and mercantilism and trade. It had nothing to do with mercy as we understand it today. And a few hundred years later, Shakespeare, who is really the architect of modern English, we could say perhaps, or one of the main ones, gave us the idea of mercy as we understand it today. But we could find nowhere, we could find that mercy, that justice should be tempered with mercy, but not that it is in fact mercy, that they are synonymous and really two parts of a whole, just like night and day, spirit and matter. So language has not caught up, the English language has not caught up with the theosophical concept of mercy. So modern Western concepts that still prevail do not see justice and mercy as part of the scales of justice. Justice is blindfolded to personalities and trivialities, but not to universal principles. And the maintaining of order, harmony, and discipline. Imperfect justice is punitive punishment without rehabilitation or restoration of harmony between the victim, the offender, and society at large. Mercy is usually seen as giving the offender a pass, either wholly or partially. So we would like to, on Mr. Judge's aphorisms of karma. There are 31. We'll just be discussing two today in our talk. But aphorism 21, karma is both merciful and just. Mercy and justice are only opposite poles of a single whole. And mercy without justice is not possible in the operations of karma. That which men call mercy and justice is defective, errant, and impure. So there, that's a pretty powerful statement about where we are today in our evolutionary journey. HPB in the key says, page 216, no man can receive more or less than his deserts without a corresponding injustice or partiality to others. And a law which could be averted, then compassion would bring about more misery than it saved, more irritation and curses than thanks. And we see this does happen. Of course, we won't go into details, but this does happen in our legal system. We'll just put it at that. In reality, we must emphasize these two are twins like spirit and matter, two sides of one hand. Remember the definition of karma, and it is an undeviating and unerring tendency in the universe to restore equilibrium, which operates incessantly. Since karma is inherent in its operation, it is always impersonal. No one can escape the law of laws. Impersonal law is an aspect of deity and always seeks to restore harmony. We may view karma as good, bad, or indifferent, which it can be, according to the personality at least, but we cannot subvert it. It is omnipresent and ever adjusting. Many imagine that they can escape karma, but this is an abomination inspired by Maya. This illusion keeps us running down rabbit holes for thousands of lives until after much pain and suffering, the personal man begins to see the lunacy and chaos in the world and seeks solutions, soul-satisfying solutions to the riddle of existence. Instead of pat nostrums aimed at achieving worldly success, the philosophy of theosophy, which is divine wisdom, power, and knowledge, is inspired mercy, absolute impartial justice. Both ancient and timeless, its ways are ever a riddle to the materialist and atheist. There is an expression that charity begins at home. One could say that mercy does also. If we are harsh on ourselves, and we're accepting here stoicism and asceticism, which are paths that are chosen, and we can discuss that later if we like, but we just want to mention that in passing. So if we are harsh on ourselves, meaning if we consider ourselves poor, miserable sinners, and by no way able to perfect ourselves, we are as unresponsible wards of a capricious an all-powerful anthropomorphic being outside of our understanding. We are apt to say that we are irresponsible pawns in a game where the laws keep changing and therefore vicarious atonement provides an exit and an anecdote. Or seemingly so, but it is not at all logical or philosophical or spiritual to any degree, the doctrine of vicarious atonement. So remember, we learn far more from and in our experiences of pain and suffering than we do from experiences of pleasure and happiness. Our most valuable and enduring lessons are often learned as a result of deep suffering. This is not a popular concept today, but it is the truth and has always been recognized as such in any spiritual philosophy worthy of the name. One could add a subtitle, if one wanted, to that famous classic, which has to do with worldly success. The book we're talking about is Think and Grow Rich. It could be, as a long 19th century subtitles, as many of them were, Think and Grow Rich Beyond Measure Through Pain and Suffering to Achieve a Lasting Wealth and Wisdom by Sharing with All and Gaining Beyond Measure. So we have some other quotes that we can bring up later during the discussion. One is the last aphorism on karma, aphorism number 31. But we'll leave it there and open up for comments, questions. Theosophy Hall.
One thing, in order for us to put up the, on the speaker view, we won't be able to see everybody. If you raise your hand, please, if you're not being called on, if somebody can, or if you could let us know that you've been trying to say something.
Go ahead.
There's a statement in the philosophy that justice is merciful insofar as it is educative. What do you mean by that?
Educative?
Justice is merciful insofar as it is educative.
Well, it's karma.
Could you repeat the question?
Yes. Justice is merciful insofar as it is educative. That is a statement in the philosophy of theosophy. Justice is merciful insofar as it is educative. And we are asked to comment on that.
Well, the whole idea with karma is learning your lessons. So karma will bring us situations in our lives that we have brought to us. And this way we will learn, if we are aware of how karma actually works, that it is not fatalistic, that we can change our attitudes, our motives towards what is happening to us. This way we will learn. We are educating ourselves that these ideas will help us to change and hopefully in the future we won't have all of these issues that will come to us.
Well, educate is from educare, which is to draw out. So we're also told that divine instructors at the beginning of our current, when Manus was lit up in the middle of the evolutionary process that we are currently in, it's all there, it's all within us. But we have forgotten, we have exercised our free will to go against the dictates of the soul, but it's there. So philosophy is here to educate us with this soul knowledge, which is a guiding light.
We have a chat. Aren't justice and mercy opposites? Justice means that we cannot get away with it. Mercy means leniency, reduction of punishment, a light sentence instead of a just one.
Well, not according to the philosophy of theosophy, but generally speaking, that's what we find in our world. So theosophy is very idealistic, yet very practical. And the reason we are as we are in today's society is largely because of vindictiveness and punishment and the personal man wanting to assert his idea of justice, which is the justice of the angry and the vengeful God. That's part of it. That's not all of it. We certainly are open to discussion on this point.
And also the idea of mercy, when in reference to karma, we have to include the sister doctrine of reincarnation, because we are being given another chance. That is the mercy, is that as long as we learn our lessons, then we can make a choice. We have that responsibility for ourselves to make the choice. So it's merciful in that a next life we can try again. And the idea of justice and mercy together, the justice is also seen in the idea of karma and reincarnation, because it is just that we can learn these lessons.
So
there's another chat.
Okay. We before the chat, and we also have another hand here at the Osby Hall. We want to say that mercy isn't necessarily pleasant. It can be a difficult situation, but one that will avert more harm. But should we, okay, so we have two hands and we have a chat. Which, so go ahead, which one?
MDW.
Well, isn't mercy basically compassion? You know, I mean, the compassionate thing to do would be a display of mercy and understanding. Again, I think the first question alludes to the fact of education or understanding our own power.
And the chat basically said the same thing. How does compassion relate to the mercy of karma? So, you know, that was, you know, that was basically answered, is that compassion is a law. It is inherent in all of us, but we sometimes block it with our choices, with our thoughts. So compassion then in regards to mercy is, how can we put it?
Well, for an example, is it not merciful for a parent or a teacher to correct egregious behavior the student or the child might not think that they're being nice or compassionate or kind by the correction? But it is mercy if the child learns the lesson, because it will save them from egregious behavior and situations that come down the line. And they could, you know, there's so much disorder and violence in the world today, and there always is. We're not saying it's just today, but we're becoming more and more aware of it. And if there had been proper instruction and care and love and compassion and mercy, because mercy doesn't mean just letting that child do whatever they feel like. That's the opposite of mercy. That is a complete neglect of the duty of the parent or the teacher to try to grapple with the situation. And just, you know, you just can't kick the can down the road and expect that nobody's going to trip on it when it comes down later. Now, there was a hand in Theosophy Hall, and then we'll go to JCS.
Well, as regards to, you know, justice and, or rather, compassion and mercy, we just took, you know, a hypothetical example of one judge who's hearing two criminal cases, both very, very similar in so many ways, and it fits the same pattern. You know, his sentence may be very different, even though so many of the facts are the same. And his sentence may be different just based on the fact that one defendant shows that they are aware of what they did wrong and they take responsibility for it. And they are able to show the judge certain character traits where, you know, I'm willing to learn from this. If there's a path you can provide, I'll take advantage of it, such as a probation path counseling. On the other hand, the same offense could be done by someone else who shows no remorse, who takes no responsibility, and the judge knows this person is not ready to learn. So one, the judge may give a very, so to speak, light sentence, and that might seem like compassion and mercy to the one, whereas to the other, he's going to give a heavier sentence. And maybe it's because he's showing compassion to the community by removing this violent criminal from the community until such time as the law allows him to be let back into the community. So the compassion's still there. It's just what's the judge going to do about it? And the mercy is a matter of the education process. You know, when we show that we can learn from it, it would seem like the karma of it would be different. The justice, how it's meted out, would be different if we're willing to learn from it in this kind of way.
So the comment, which we can briefly summarize, was that a judge in a courtroom has to look at each case differently. And according to the facts of the case, the attitude of the one that is being sentenced. And there are so many mitigating factors, and we have to look at society. How will this affect society? Is this person contrite and sincere? Is this an error they made that the judge thinks can be corrected through one avenue of correction, we'll say, or punishment, but tempered with mercy? Or is this somebody that's really needs to be put away to safeguard society? JCS?
Yeah, we can take this much closer to home. As we parent ourselves as soul trying to raise the lower use of mind, as we, quote, parent children that may be trusted to our care, what we're offering is a two-pronged realization. One is mercy, compassion, the identification of oneness with the other soul as two learners moving together in life. And the mercy is a loving identification with the other soul, despite conditions, despite actions. The justice portion comes in that loving, compassionate stance, being translated into two souls working on the same problem, so that there's no critique, there's no criticism, there's no judgment, there's no prejudicial stance, but rather it's an invitation, a namaste moment of one soul to another, saying to the lower self or to the other, this is an opportunity to learn. This is the effect, the consequence, or the result of previous action. Let's work on this together. So it's at once justice and mercy.
We have a wonderful short quote from St. Thomas Aquinas. Justice without mercy is cruelty, and mercy without justice is the mother of dissolution.
LRP has her hand up. I don't know if you can see it.
Go ahead, LRP.
Everything that's been said in the comments from us, the listeners, has been wonderful. But the subject is justice and mercy of karma. And we're talking about our use of mercy. It is, karma is merciful because it is the opportunity to unlearn and therefore change our behavior. So that's the most merciful thing you can think of. I can fix what I have done in ignorance, and I can learn because karma is merciful.
Thank you. And it unfolds as we are able to learn the lesson, and generally gradually.
And also part of this, the topic today is the realization of justice and mercy. So realizing that karma is just and merciful is a responsibility that we have as soul beings, as spiritual beings, that we can change, and the reason for that change can help not only us, but as one of the previous comments about two people working together. So that idea of realization is an educative moment as well. And we have two chats here.
Okay.
The first one is, if karma were only just, it would bring to the doer of evil only punishment. But does karma also bring to such an individual many opportunities to improve through reincarnation and contact with those who can assist them in finding the right path? So, yes, indeed, that is one of the realizations, is that our choices as it says, bring to such an individual opportunities. So we know that in every life and in every lives, opportunities are going to come to us. And we need to change our idea that they are not obstacles, but opportunities to learn, opportunities for growth. And it says to improve through reincarnation and contact with those who can assist them. And those people that we come in contact with that assist us, we can look at them as karmic agents, that they will bring us the opportunities for growth. We have another chat, but if somebody, do you want
to go to the next chat?
Anybody else want to comment on that chat?
JCS had her hand up.
JCS?
Yeah. I was having a thought after one of the previous comments in that we need to be very careful about our concept of karma, that we don't turn the notion of karma, cause and effect, into an external, personalized, anthropomorphic force, but rather, if we are truly universal in our thinking and all inclusive, each human entity is a force unto itself, is a karmic agent, and therefore part of this tremendous interplay of karma, universal in the macrocosm and expressed more particularized in the microcosm, but it's all one and the same.
Thank you. We would like to just read a short quote by Winston Churchill. All great things are simple. Many can be expressed in a single word. Freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, and hope. And isn't it true that all great ideas are at their root really simple, but through karma, that inextricable matrix that we are in, that is, we have been not only creating for ourselves during this period of evolution for 18 million years as thinking beings, but it was brought over from the last period of evolution. So it's never ending. And we have that book, in a sense, is closed for our examination. But yet, from the beginning of this Manvantara, we had that inheritance. And it's a matrix where it's very, very intricate, very involved, yet these ideas of freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, and hope are to be kept in the forefront, we think.
And there's a chat that it goes along with the last couple comments. If someone is suffering, and if we help him, give him relief, will he not learn the lesson that karma gave him? Please discuss. Not necessarily. MDW?
I mean,
what was the karmic lesson to be learned? We don't know. Maybe it was to be, the karmic lesson was that there are other human beings that are compassionate and wanting to help. Maybe that's a very important thing, you know, that we come to the aid of another human being. We try to fulfill our duty. And we think that has a great impact. But we are also told that we are evolving from within outward. So everything that comes, that has manifested, has come from within us. And our, and we are told that our brain is a dynamic generator of force. So I think, could we consider ourselves the generators of karma, of all karma, not all karma, but the generators of karma?
Yes, we are the generators of our own, for sure, our own karma. But the question, it says, if we give him relief, will he not learn the lesson karma gave him? That is a question that seems to come up in our Wednesday class when we're looking at the karmic section of the ocean, is how do we know when to help and when to hold back? And that is something that we can't see what somebody else's karma is. And it usually comes out in the class that it says we should err on the side of the person, that we should help, because we don't know the karmic lesson for us, and we certainly don't know the karmic lesson for somebody else. So it's just because we're helping somebody doesn't mean that they are going to learn the lesson. We don't know that. We don't know what they're going to learn from an interaction with somebody who is being compassionate towards them. The example about a parent or a child or a teacher, you know, we do what we feel as though is best for them. And helping someone, it's our motive. Why are we doing that? We can do it with the highest motive in mind, but that person, it's on them whether they are going to accept it or not.
Well, we can only carry the message. We cannot carry their mess. They made the mess. They need to clean it up. We can be compassionate, kind, but we don't want to be enabling to the point where they're not going to learn. That's not mercy. That's not kindness. That's not justice. And it's just, you know, it's just not. LRP. Unmute.
Yeah, in stereo. We think incorrectly that if someone has done something terrible to us and we show mercy, we forgive them, that it has affected their karma. But no, that affects us, that mercy. But the individual to whom we showed the mercy is still going to face the karma for those actions.
Yes.
Forgiveness is an incredible thing. And there's a program that's out there. We don't know if it's in the prisons or if it's an outside organization, where the victims or the victim's family is able to confront the perpetrator, and they offer forgiveness to this person. And as was said, we think that it's probably more of a positive experience, we think, to the person who is giving the forgiveness. But we really don't know how it's going to go. But we're getting towards the end of the meeting.
Well, that would have to be mutually agreed upon for it to work. And it has worked, but who can tell? So we just wanted to read the last, even though we didn't discuss this, the last aphorism on karma number 31 does show that mercy. Egos who have no karmic connection with a portion of the globe where a cataclysm is coming, or a cataclysm is coming on, are kept out of harm's way, either A, by repulsion, acting on their inner nature, or B, by being called and warned by those who watch the progress of the world. So if it's not your karma, we will be mercifully protected by those who are always guiding us and working behind the scenes. So we think we've reached the end of time. So we want to just adjourn the meeting at this point. Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone.